From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Deborah, and yes, you're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, and this is a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM NBC Sports Radio Boston, where we reach five states just by turning the dial and streaming on Dream Vision 7. And then this show, Bernie's show, is heard every first Sunday at 8 p.m., and then on 1510, and then you can go on dreamvision7radio.com and listen to his shows Wednesday through Friday, twice a day, 12 noon, and then 12 a.m. And I want to thank Bernie, because think about his whole entire life. All he has done is to give, serve, and here he's doing these glorious radio shows to help you out there find a better way of living and finding joy and love in everyday life. So I want to thank you, Bernie, for all that you do.
Well, thank you. I mean, I don't think of it as doing, if you know what I mean. It's become my life, and so it's a part of it. So I do get tired at times.
I bet.
Because I am doing a lot. But I don't think of it as work, let's put it that way. It's just my life.
Yes, it is. And I just want to, you know, we're honored to have you with us and all that you share. And that's what we're all about anyway, is helping others find better ways of living, being conscious. And one of the things that that's been on your mind is running out of time. And I wonder there's so many areas we could go into. I could use a couple extra hours each day myself.
Well, the funny thing I find is every time I'm being interviewed, of course, I never stop talking because I have so many stories to tell about, you know, people I've taken care of and in one way or another. I don't mean just as a surgeon operating, but, you know, just people who've been a part of my life. And so you get on all these programs and you start talking, and whoever's interviewing you says, Bernie, we're running out of time. And, you know, I always stop then and say, you know, someday we're all going to run out of time. And one of the other things I do when you're lecturing, too, there are some compulsive organizations that have somebody in the front row holding up a sign, 60 minutes, 45 minutes, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And this one organization, I took all the signs they had because I had to laugh. It got down to 5 minutes. And then the last one was, wrap it up. You know? And so I show that to audiences, and they all laugh. But I say that we're all going to run out of time someday.
Yes.
So make good use of your life's time. You know, don't waste it. And to me, that's the most important thing of all. And that includes not doing things, if you know what I mean, that when people ask you to do something you don't want to do, then the correct answer is no. You know, I'm not going to do it. I always remember once being called by my sister. I don't remember, some, you know, family event. And I said, no, you know, I can't come. And she said, we're having a happy day and you're not coming. And I got such a kick out of, you know, her expression, we're going to have a happy day and you're not coming. And we'll get into that, too. But, again, my choice was no, because I didn't feel like driving a couple of hours. And, you know, it starts to drain you. So it's make use of your time and make your choices, I'd say, based on, you know, I'm always repeating this, letting your heart make up your mind. Because you never find a high school or church called Sacred Mind, you know, or Sacred Brain, but there are a lot of sacred hearts.
Right, right. And it's listening to your how you feel about it. If you feel a little uncomfortable, then you follow that feeling and say no, thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, how other people react is their problem, because if they want to be submissive and do things that they don't enjoy doing, someday, you see, they're going to realize, oh, my, I'm running out of time, you know, and then suddenly they change their life because they've been told, you know, heart disease, cancer, whatever. And then they end up living a lot longer. And that, you know, is part of what I try to get across to people all the time. That when you wake up loving your life, your body does all it can to keep you here. And when you get up hating your life and the traffic and the work and all the things I have to do, you know, that's good old Monday morning, more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. So, you know, live as if it isn't Monday every day.
Right. And isn't it interesting how people put their lives on hold during the week, Monday through Friday, to wait for the weekend?
Yeah.
And it's so I have family members I know, they'll talk about, oh, I can't wait until Saturday, and yet they forget about living in that moment.
Right, right. I got to, you mind if I give you a test?
Okay, well, let me...
What you're reminding me of is one of the questions I was going to ask you about. They're a simple question, but I'd just like you to answer them, all right?
Okay, sorry.
All right.
A right or wrong answer, we'll see.
The first one, well, let me say this so that people understand. One of our sons, many years ago, opened a Subway franchise.
Oh.
And I loved it. I asked him if I could work for him. You know, he's looking at me like, you want to work? I mean, my laughing, my humorous side was, you know, I'm a surgeon, so I get gloves and knife and a uniform, and so it fits right in, like the operating room. And people used to tell him, you're making use of your father. People know him, and you're making him work for you. And he kept saying, no, I'm not. He wants to do it. You know,
right.
I was always apologizing. But when people came in, the questions I'm going to ask you were, I mean, I got about 80 questions, but what the things I asked them. Because what I found was, number one, I wasn't there just to make a sandwich. I was there to enjoy the people. And when they'd come in, I'd say, you know, when they'd order, I'd say, well, I'll make your sandwich if you answer a question for me. They'd look at me like, what's your question? And then I would ask them these. And I have to add, what was hysterical was when people would say, I'm here to eat, not talk, I would always say to them, are you a psychotherapist? And there was 100% correlation. I swear, it was hysterical.
Sure.
As soon as I'd say, are you a therapist? Yes. How did you know that? Because you don't want to talk. But anyway, first question, how would you introduce yourself to God?
I would just say, here I am, full of love.
And God would say, come back when you know who you are. Why? I mean, because the point I make is that if you separate yourself, see, here I am, it's me, what you should be saying is, it's you to God, or your child. So God says, okay, come on in, because you're part of the divine stuff, and you need to realize that.
Very nice.
And I have to add, at one high school where I never would have expected an answer like this, because usually these kids are, oh, you know, I'm so depressed, God won't want me. But this kid, it was so funny. I said, how would you introduce yourself to God? And he jumped up and he said, tell God his replacement is here. And everybody, you know, busts out laughing. But I always say that's a kid who does feel like God's child. You know, I'm sure his parents have loved him. And so he can come up with a crazy answer like that.
Sure.
Next question. Who is the most important person in your life?
Person?
Yeah. Who is the most important person?
Well, I have to say the higher intelligence, God, and we say God because we're so used to using that term, but...
That's not a person.
Yeah, I know, but yet it is for me in that sense. Other than that, I would say it was my late husband.
All right. But what about you?
Well, that yes, that's a very good point. And yes, and I teach that to love ourselves. But
I'd say you're the most important person in your life.
That's right. and we're all on
and remember
our
remember that and take good care of yourself.
Right. And that's something I think is important when you say take good care of yourself, because many of us that do for others and hoping to make a difference in the world, sometimes we forget about ourselves.
Right. But it's, again, you know, one of the things, because I was thinking about that, it's not about ego or selfishness, but it's your own sense of self-worth. So you're first on the list, but what you're using your life for is to give love to others. You know what I mean? That you're living your true life, so you're contributing to the world in your way.
Exactly.
And you're important to yourself.
Right.
Now, next question.
Okay.
What's the best day of your life?
The best day of my life? Well, I would imagine it was when I was born.
Now, I'm laughing because I get into this so many times with people. I went into the bank and, you know, went up to the teller. And instead of carrying out bank business, because they all know I'm not normal, I said, what's the best day of your life? And she said, oh, the day I gave birth to my daughter, very similar to what you're saying. And somebody else in the bank heard me and yelled, wrong! You know, and the woman looks at her like, what? How can you tell me I'm wrong? And the person said, today is the best day of your life.
Right.
And that's what we need to remember, too.
Yeah.
Today is the best day. It's got all the opportunities.
Right, and the moments.
Yeah.
And let me just say this, too. Whenever, you know, when you're constantly, the mind is constantly going, and whenever you stop it, and I know you have done that, where you just say, okay, stop to yourself, and just be in that moment. You just rise up and you fill with love and tingles because you're actually being at that very moment. And that is something I think everyone should do, is just stop and just wherever they are, sit for that moment and just be. Listen to the breathing and look around. Everything's so much clearer.
Yeah.
I love to do that.
Yeah, because I was thinking in the same way you're saying that so many people now, instead of saying, you know, hello, have a nice day, good afternoon, good morning, when you pass them, they say, how are you? How are you doing? And they don't stop to listen or really care. You know, I'm not talking about people in the family who walk up to you and say, how are you? Or call you. You know, they're interested and they want to talk to you. But these are, you know, people out on the street or shopping or wherever, or you're exercising and walking. And how are you? How you doing? They don't even look. You know, there are times I will say, do you really want to know? You know, or terrible, I'm depressed. And then they don't know what to do with you. But I think we should say to people, good morning, have a nice day, peace be with you. You know, something other than how are you, which means nothing, because people are just saying it, but not thinking about the fact that it is a question, asking other people how they are.
Sure.
You know, if you really care, then stop when you say, how are you? And look at the person, you know, so they can smile at you and, you know, say fine if they want to, or deny, you know, everything. But just make it real and contact the other person.
Right.
Now,
heart to heart.
Here's a good one. I want to pray for something for you. What would you ask me to pray for?
Eternal peace and love in essence. That's what I would ask.
For whom?
All the animal kingdom, the human kingdom, everything.
Yeah, that's all right. You get a good grade then. No, the reason I say that is that so many people, again, are just focused on themselves.
Yeah.
And what, I don't even know how this question came into my mind one day, but I was visiting my mother-in-law. She was in a nursing home at the time, sitting in a wheelchair. I knew that her underpants were wet. You know what I mean? There's a million things bothering her because she had that look and was telling me all these things. So I said to her, what can I pray for you? I thought that would give her a chance to vent, you know, like,
sure,
get me a nurse, get me dry underwear, you know, that's what I want. And she just became a totally different person. It's hard to describe in words, but you know, this agitation and tenseness that was her at that moment just disappeared. She became this totally relaxed, at peace, you know, like a monk or a saint all of a sudden. And she looked up at me and she said, "World peace." That blew my mind. In the middle of all her troubles, that she could say world peace. And I have to add that in like 30 years, less than 10 people have ever said that. You know what I mean? Because everybody else wants, you know, nice weather, more money, something, a new car. It's also personal that they're not
thinking about. Well, it's human nature for people to think about what they would like.
But we have to change. That's why there was
exactly. We do have to change.
They use that as an excuse.
Exactly.
That's my nature. That's my nature. And my comment is, well, you know, you can change your nature. You can have a different nature, a second nature. But, you know, when people aren't willing to change, then it's everything is personal and everybody's wrong except them.
I think that many people, if they started asking themselves questions, why am I so miserable? Why am I thinking so negatively? And then want to change it. And it's a choice, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you know, we get back to the first question, you know, about running out of time. And I think that that's the fact, that it's a choice. And I always say, if I'm here for a limited time, then what the hell do I want to be miserable for?
Right.
I find that, and I mean this literally, that to me, death is the greatest teacher. I even wrote a poem called Death, What a Great Teacher You Are About Life. You know? Because if you know you're here for a limited time, then what the hell are you doing being miserable? You know? I mean, your thoughts are your own.
Right.
And I can remember years ago when I first started working with cancer patients and wanted to help them be survivors, how much I started reading about, you know, books written by people who've been in the concentration camp and things like that, where they, you know, chose their attitude. Yeah, what's his name? Viktor Frankl, in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, he said, to live is to suffer. To survive is to find meaning in the suffering. And there was some other fellow who, I can't remember who it was, but with a sense of humor, he said, if you're no longer suffering, it means you're dead. So, but again, I always say it's difficult. I don't know, I use the word suffering all the time, but life is difficult, and we have to find meaning in the difficulty. What's his name? Joseph Campbell said, when you're going through hell, ask yourself, what am I to learn from this? And
right.
I find that very helpful. I mean it. That when you're having troubles in your life, if you stop and say, what am I to learn from this? Then, you know, it changes. It changes me. I know that.
Right.
And I'm not into the anger, you know, at myself and other people and why it isn't, you know, working out right and they're not behaving or whatever it is. But it's, what am I to learn from this? And it's always about how I'm behaving.
Right, and you can see clearer when you look at it from a different perspective. Take yourself out of it.
But let it be a teacher rather than just, you know, something else to fix and a problem. And I may add one more back to the concentration camp, that I read this, some of this at lectures that I give, because how powerful the mind is. It was written by a physician who, with his community, was thrown into a concentration camp. And they were basically told, if you can't work, then you are not fed. You starve to death. Or they put a bullet through your head. And if you're in the infirmary where you were sick and couldn't work, then you just lay there and died. Nobody fed you or did anything. And he knew he had all these sick people from his community. And he just didn't know what he was going to do for them because, you know, he had no medications, no resources. And what amazed him and he wrote about was how when disease, you know, had basically no benefits or treatments, how the mind rejected the disease and how these people continued to function and survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that is it's amazing to think what everyone went through during that time.
Yeah. But, again, as he was saying, there was no benefit to illness. People aren't going to be nice to you, take care of you, let you rest. And so, again, they rejected the illness at a mental level and went on functioning. But, yes, I have to add that when I read the history just of the Jewish people, and it's just incredible.
Yeah.
What
the human race has done to
each other. Yeah, what we do to each other.
Each other. And the other piece of it, too, is that's on my mind lately, is here we are in 2013. Why do we have to kill each other? You know, even the war, the Afghan, what are these young guys and women dying for? It's just like, why are we killing each other? And what have we learned?
Well, good old Albert Schweitzer, I keep saying his term, a reverence for life. I mean, this morning I saved a lot of worms, picking them up and putting them back on the ground that are out in the road, because there's so many leaves now, they, I think, get mixed up and lost, with all the leaves, and they go out on the road.
Right, but, and you have reverence for life. I do the same thing with the daddy long legs. I let them stay where they are.
Yeah. But you see, if we had our kids grow up with love and a reverence for life, then they wouldn't do this to other people.
Right. But even our mindset with war, it has to be eliminated. But we're going to come right back, Bernie, and we can pick up right from here. So everyone stay with us. Back in a moment.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Join us every second and fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
You're listening to Mind Health Matters with the Dr. Bernie Siegel. And if you'd like to connect with Bernie, simply go on his site. He's very receptive. You just fill out the form, and it's BernieSiegelMD.com, and Siegel is S-I-E-G-E-L, BernieSiegelMD.com. And if you'd like to order any of Bernie's books and save at the same time, you can go to his son and daughter-in-law's site. It's wisdomoftheages.biz. Again, wisdomoftheages.biz, B-I-Z. And when you're ordering any of his items, you just put code 27 in the comment box during checkout, and you'll save 15% of all your items. So remember that. So we're talking about the reverence for life. And
oh, yeah.
Yes, and you wanted to share.
Well, yeah, when we were off the air, as I mentioned, that our son, who is an FBI agent, and when they enroll at the school, they are asked, can you kill someone? I mean, at his graduation, they played a movie of, you know, what they go through in their training and everything. And when I, you know, saw that, I thought, wow, that one of our children said, yes, I'm capable of killing someone. But, you know, what's different is that the other day I got an email from him. And in it, he said that he was at some, you know, training session down in Virginia, and that he was walking, just, I don't know where he was strolling, so to speak, but he saw a turtle. And he said it probably was a male that I got a kick out of because, you know, it didn't ask for directions. But the thing that impressed me, he then said, I picked it up and I carried it for half an hour until I found a pond, and then I put it in. And, you know, he returned it to the water. And I thought, wow. You know, here's somebody, you know, like a kid I wouldn't worry about, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Hurting people, taking revenge. He spent his time saving the life of a turtle. Now, some people would think he's nuts, but I was very proud of him. You know,
yes.
That he did something like that with his time, because if he's brought up that way, I don't have to worry about him doing, you know, hurting somebody someday because he's taking care of a turtle. And they were, all our kids were brought up with what I call a reverence for life, because we had a house full of creatures, and they cared for the creatures. And I mean, literally, just as you're saying, you take care of a spider, they would carry insects out of the house, adopt all kinds of pets. Veterinarians gave us crazy animals. I learned later that we broke all kinds of zoning laws, but no one, including the police, ever reported us.
Yeah.
I mean, I called the police now and then when some exotic creature was missing. I mean, they are 100% of the time they were in the house somewhere, you know, hidden away in closets or rafters in the basement, and you'd find them later. But the police never said, you're not supposed to have those things in your house, you know, because they knew we were doing it out of love and taking care of everything, you know, not like these articles you read in the newspaper where somebody has 47 cats and the house is, you know, smells so horrible the neighbors are calling the police about it. Our house didn't smell. We cleaned up and everybody became family. Every creature had a name.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were, as I say, family. They were like the children's children. And I think, again, if we all grew up with that kind of feeling about life, you wouldn't hurt another human being.
Right.
But I think when you grow up with, what is it, indifference, rejection, and abuse, the opposites of love, then you do seek revenge. You know, and the revenge can be against anybody.
Right.
You know, all the headlines we read, whether you go into work, school, Washington, you know, Navy base, and you go shooting and killing, it's based on what went on in your life.
You know, right.
Because to me, you could be psychotic and not dangerous, if you know what I mean. Just to
absolutely.
Say, well, he's crazy. Yeah, but
right.
Why is he crazy, you know, violent? Why
right.
isn't he crazy at home doing nice things?
That's the difference.
Yeah.
They're not, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he can be doing crazy things, but they could be creative. And
right.
I always remember my dear friend Carl Menninger, the psychiatrist, saying that aggression was a normal part of life. I see, when he used that word, I thought of it in a negative way, you know, being aggressive. But he said, Bernie, what if it's in sports? What if it's in your work? You know, I mean, you could be knocking a house down, cutting a tree down, knocking a person down on a football field, things like that. Yeah,
sure.
What's that? I forgot his name, the quarterback who was put in jail because of using dogs, you know, and violence.
Oh, yes, Michael.
Yeah.
Is it Michael Vick?
Vick, yeah, Michael Vick.
Yes.
I was just thinking, maybe if he hadn't been a quarterback, he wouldn't have done that. In other words, if he was a linebacker, you know, banging into people, knocking them down, you know, struggling with them, he might not have needed the dog thing.
Mm.
But as a quarterback, you know, they're coming after him, if you know what I mean.
Right. And yeah, if he was filled with love for himself, and that's where it all starts, he wouldn't want to hurt the dogs.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would see them as something sacred. It's life.
Right.
And
you just look at everything differently when you... Yeah.
And yet, we have to understand that people choose professions for the wrong reasons, too. And because they're not analyzed, they don't know it. I had a lot of pain as a doctor because I cared about people. But nobody in medical school prepared me for the fact that people die. You know, and that you operate on people and they'll have complications. I mean, I literally said to many of my patients, I quit. Because, you know, because I wasn't perfect, if you know what I mean. That I would operate on them and then they would have side effects, complications of surgery. You know, you'd injure something during it. And I don't mean it in the sense of malpractice, but I mean in terms of just the technical difficulties of the operation, that complications would occur.
Right.
And then after surgery, it was so hard for me to deal with what they were going through because I wasn't, you know, perfect. And I would literally say to some of them, I quit. I'm sorry, I quit. I can't take this anymore. They would always say, you're not quitting. And they'd give me a hug, and
right.
they would restore me because they knew I cared and I was trying, and it wasn't my fault. You know, things happen.
Now, how did you get to a place where you were comfortable with that?
It from them. They were my therapists.
Okay.
I mean, because many of them began to say to me, see, I didn't realize it because I used to say, I need to hug you. I didn't hear the first two words. They were, I need.
Mm-hmm.
Never occurred to me, I needed it.
Yes.
But I realized, yes, they didn't need the hug. You needed it. And so I began to apologize to my patients. You know, because think of saying to somebody, you have cancer. I mean, what a horrible message to have to give to somebody.
Mm.
And I'd say, I need to hug you. And I learned later that I was the one in pain over it, and I began to apologize to the patient, saying, I'm sorry, that I got you to hug me. And they said, look, it's okay.
Because they needed it, too.
Well, no, what they answered was, we knew you needed it.
Oh, really?
So we hugged you. Yeah. It was okay to ask. You know, they sensed that I was in pain and appreciated that I was hurting with them.
Right.
So, but what I realized was then we both felt better because they felt better giving something, you know, some love and a hug, and I felt better getting it.
Absolutely.
And, it changed the relationship. And I think,
right.
you know, I keep saying we're all wounded. Don't ever forget that. So if you need a hug, ask, and don't hesitate to give it. I mean,
right.
the one thing I will add, why I learned to say, you know, may I hug you, because I realized, which, again, I hadn't experienced as a youngster, that people had been sexually abused. And so I would hug some people, and I thought, oh, God, this is like hugging a telephone pole. You know what I mean? They were rigid and stiff and straight and not embracing you. And I realized, hey, dumbbell, if they've been sexually abused and then you come over and give them a hug, what's it bringing up in their life, you know, in their comfort? So I also learned to say, you know, may I hug you? Is it all right if I hug you?
And yet with that said, because they've had that trauma, by you hugging them, you're part of the healing process.
Yeah. I would say most of them would say yes, because it was a different relationship and feeling.
Right. But,
and it took them a lot of time to relax and enjoy it and participate in it, you know, because of, I think, all the memories that it would bring up for them when you know, they were embraced by someone.
Right.
And I think it's harder when you're brought up with love and a reverence for life, you know, that we've been talking about, to realize that everybody isn't. And, you know, they need help. And we need to really do more for the children of the world to really help them to have that feeling and to be cared about and to take care of, you know, each other.
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, I like the term love warrior that I'm always talking about, that if we would use love as our weapon. And I mean it. I wish they'd put me in charge, or at least some nice mothers in charge of the world, because I always have a feeling that when we're in conflict with another country, what if we offered them a gift, do something nice for you, instead of spending money, you know, sending the army over and dropping bombs on you? What if we did something nice to improve your country?
Exactly.
I would find, like I do in my life, when I say I love you to somebody who's yelling at me, that they don't know what to do with me. And I think the same would happen on a political level, that if you walked up to the, you know, prime minister of some other country and said, hey, we love you, what can we do to help?
Right. Well, you hold that thought, right, Bernie, because we need to take another break. Everyone, don't go away. We'll be back with more Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, Inspiring True Stories of Healing, Gratitude and Love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, Daily Messages of Inspiration, Hope, and Love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Today is the first day of the rest of your life. Join us the third Sunday of each month at 7 p.m. for The Door is Open, Walk Right In, for fascinating discussion topics from Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, to psychology and tarot, to hypnosis, to strength-based recovery. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Okay, we are back, and I wanted to give out Bernie's site again. It is BernieSiegelMD.com, and it's S-I-E-G-E-L, BernieSiegelMD.com. And you can hear his show again Wednesday through Friday right on Dream Vision 7 Radio, 12 noon and 12 a.m., both, you know, each day, as well as on 1510 every first Sunday at 8 p.m. Always trying to remember everyone's
right
time. So you were talking, Bernie, about imagine if we were to give someone, a dictator,
right,
some love or a hug, or that, just that gesture would change things. Some people believe that it wouldn't, but it can.
Yeah, Yeah, that's why I say the love warrior. But it's funny, just in front of me on my computer is a quote from Anwar Sadat. It surprised me that from him. But it said, there can be hope only for a society which acts as one big family, not as many separate ones.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's the thing. If we just realize we're family. I always say, as a surgeon, we're all the same inside. You know, the only thing that's different is our outside. And yeah, then we have different nationalities, religions, blah, blah, and we go on and on. But, you know, they don't have to be something to fight over and kill over.
Right. Don't you think trust has a lot to do with that?
Yeah.
You know, trust that the love is going to make a difference and trust
yeah.
that the person
yeah.
on the receiving end is going to feel it.
Yes.
Instead
and, you
of
know, and that's something that's hard to do now, you know, with politics and everything else. That, you know, when everybody focuses on their personal needs and interests, it becomes a very difficult. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's the planet or some city or community, you know, when there's conflict, we have trouble. But when people are willing to sit down, listen to each other, talk to each other, then you come to a, you know, a solution. You
right.
find a solution that works for everybody.
And open the mind to different perspectives.
I mean, Gandhi was a great example of this. Because when the English, you know, when he wanted to get India back from England, you know, that and handed back to the people of India, and he interacted with the British, they didn't know what to do with him, because literally, when you read about him, you know, they would have meetings in which there would be all kinds of political conflict, but at the end of the meeting, they always liked Gandhi, because he was so nice,
right.
you know, with his nonviolence. And one thing I read was that a cholera epidemic broke out or something. And he got all his people together to drive ambulances and pick people up and take them for medical help. And so, you know, he stopped arguing with the British. And they're looking at, here he is helping us. You know, we run into a crisis. And so it was hard for them to be angry at him.
Right.
Because he was so nice. And that's what I call the love warrior. You know, when people are driving you nuts, you say, I love you. And it's also harder, even again, back to concentration camps. A gentleman named Jack Schwarz, he wrote a book about his experience. But he said, ich liebe dich, I love you, to a German guard who was deciding. You know, the people were lined up, and the guard was sending them, you know, one place or another. And he knew he's deciding who goes to the gas chamber, who goes to, you know, a work camp. And so when he came up to the guard, he said, I love you.
Mm.
Because he knew that was going to be a burden for the guard.
Right.
I mean, he meant it genuinely. You know, he wasn't just saying it maybe to save my life. He meant it. But he also knew that it would be harder for someone to kill you if you're looking them in the eye and saying, I love you.
I love you, I know.
Yeah, rather than you son of a bitch. You know, I
hate yeah.
you.
And imagine those gods at that time doing what they were doing,
yeah.
thinking, from what I've heard or read, that back then there was a lot of poverty and families were looking to be fed and sheltered. And so when Hitler came along the way and promised all this basic thing that they needed for their children, then they believed in him. And then it all turned ugly. Go ahead.
Something interesting that I was watching quite a while ago, some TV program, and they gave this, what do you call the people who, you know, like tell your fortune from your birth date? I forgot the word that's used for it. But she was given 5 birth dates and asked to tell them on this program who the mass murderers were based upon the date of their birth. And she was absolutely correct. I think it was 4 out of 5 of them were mass murderers. And she picked the right ones.
Mm-hmm.
But then I really appreciated her You know, that it's not just not saying to people, it's just about what day you're born is what, you know. She said, but perhaps if they had grown up with enough love, this would not have happened.
Mm.
You know, so she was saying the same thing. And when I heard her say that, I thought, okay, I can appreciate what you're saying and believe you. Because you understand it's not just the minute you're born, but also how you're treated after you're born and what you're exposed to and everything else.
Mm.
Again, I don't know if I told you, when I was on Cape Cod, there was horrendous traffic, and a teenager in a car with his girlfriend behind me was screaming obscenities at me. You know, I mean, he was screaming, I'm sure, at the world, but I'm the car in front of him who's listening to all this.
Yes.
We pull up to a cop, and this was in Orleans, and I said to the cop, can you tell that kid to be quiet? And the cop amazed me. He said, no, it's not my job. I thought, what? You know, it's not your job? Okay. I get out of the car with my kid saying, Dad, he could have a gun. And I walked over to the car, and I said to him, I want you to know I love you. I'm sorry that your parents don't.
Oh.
Now, I thought later that, gee, that wasn't nice to finish with. But then I reconsidered that. I love you. I'm sorry your parents don't. He backed his car, made a U-turn, and drove away.
Oh.
And boy, I know what I said was true.
And
my
he felt
hope
it.
Is, you see, that he'll stop and think about that.
Yes.
That guy loves me. My parents don't. Look what it's doing to me. You know, that maybe he would then make a different choice about his life, say, and not be the aggressive or go murder his parents or, you know, whatever. You know, because another boy, again, I can't remember what I've told you or not told you over the years, but who was sexually abused by his parents and their friends and lived in his bedroom, he said, was bare. You know, he slept on the floor most of the time. And he'd say, can I watch television? And they'd say, if you do a sexual favor, we'll put a TV in your room tonight or the radio in tonight.
Mm.
And he developed AIDS. And that's when I got to know him and his story, you know, because I was trying to help him survive years ago. I mean, before there was treatments and, you know, the epidemic first came out.
Mm.
But one day when he called me, he said, Dr. Siegel, yeah, Tony, what is it? I'm going to commit suicide. I said, Tony, I know people in New York. I grew up there. We'll get a gun. We'll kill your parents. And I want people to know I talk that way to people. I ain't kidding when I talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Get a gun. We can kill your parents. That's what all the other kids are doing. Why don't you? And I never forget the next sentence. No, I don't want to be like them.
Right.
He doesn't want to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
And boy, you know, that hit home. You know, that's like a knock on your heart.
That's
that
you right.
could go through all that abuse, and instead of taking revenge and then feeling guilty and probably committing suicide himself, no, I don't want to be like them. I'll just end my life.
Mm.
And the happy ending was that he went to the subway. I'm laughing because I believe in angels. I know they exist. And the train didn't show up because he said, I went down to jump in front of the A train, but it didn't come. And as he's looking around the station, there was a hotline for suicide prevention, you know, an 800 number. And he called it. And then he said, I learned about love, and that was the important thing in life.
Mm, I love that.
I really,
story.
When I say I believe in angels, my inner guide is what I call him because I talk to him and meditations. Two people have seen him standing next to me when I've lectured and spoke at a funeral. So, you know, my feeling is that Tony had an angel too that made sure the train got delayed so he didn't know what to do with himself. Because I say, when you're going to commit suicide, you don't take reading material, you know, along with you to keep you busy if you're waiting.
Well, in these last few minutes, let's leave everyone with thoughts of running out of time.
Yeah,
that story really proves it. That
they rebirth yourself.
Yes.
If you don't like your life, end that life. Don't end, you know, your physical life, but end the life that isn't the authentic you and start a new life. Give yourself a new name and start a new life.
Yeah. And you know, so many things are happening to many people in their own world, and it is rebirthing.
Yeah.
You know, they may be recovering from cancer, and they can step out of it and heal. That's rebirthing.
And see that as labor pains.
Yes.
You know, then it hurts a lot less when you know it's going to be productive. Yeah, you know, because one woman wrote about her treatment for cancer. She said, because she said in her poem, she compared the 9 months of giving birth to her child to 12 months of chemotherapy and radiation. And she said, the 9 months was worthwhile, I gave birth to my child. The 12 months was worthwhile, I gave birth to myself.
Mm.
And another, you know, person I know, a woman, the end of her long letter to me was, cancer made me take a look at myself, and I like who I met.
Yeah. I like that. And so it all goes back to, we've got to act now. And you mentioned the kids earlier, and you know how I feel about that. We need to teach the little ones now so that they will be in that love as they go along, and they won't be trying to figure it out like we are.
Yeah, you know the term I use that the suicidal teenager gave me. You're my CD. And I said, what are you talking about? I'm a CD. She said, yeah, you're my chosen dad. So I said, people need to understand that. You can be a chosen mom or a chosen dad. And when you love people, they change in time. That's something I saw as a physician. That totally self-destructive people who weren't doing anything that was, you know, good for them, they were so used to being rejected by doctors and parents and everybody that they just kept it up. And so, you know, doctors would say, you know, I'm not giving you a return appointment. There's no point. You're not doing it. I would always say, see you again. See you next week. Give them a hug. You know, and I saw that in 3 and 6 months later, by my persisting, they began to realize, I must be worth something. He keeps telling me to come back.
Right, and you gave them hope.
Even when I didn't like what they were doing, if you know what I mean, they knew I loved them. You know, that I held them in a sense of self-worth. And so they began to feel it.
Right. And you gave them hope.
Mm.
And I think that is very important to hold that as well, especially during challenging times.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with age, I have to say to people. I mean, I don't care how old people are. I'll just say, hey, you need a father, I'll be your father. You know, it's about the relationship, about caring. Again, being a life coach, that's another term I use, that you're coaching them and helping them survive life. So you can be critical in a coaching style. You know what I mean? You're not telling them they're terrible, a failure, you know, embarrass me. You're telling them there's a better way of doing something, like a coach would to an athlete. So
you're
not saying you're a terrible performer, get off the, you know, the stage or get off the field. They're saying, here, this is a better way of doing it. And then people listen and change.
Yes, and that's a good way, perfect way of ending the show. So until the next time, everyone, with Dr. Bernie Siegel and Mind Health Matters, bye for now.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.